My name is Peter Sommerlach. I'm a professor for software engineering at HSR Rapperswil, and that's our campus. And actually, that's also where this head started out. The 2011 and the 2014 standards were more or less finalized on our campus when we had the WG21 meeting in Rapperswil in Switzerland. And if you want to learn more about what we are doing, you can also, there's three student volunteers actually from my class who are sitting here in the second row, and whenever you see them around this conference, ask them how I teach, and tell them if you're disappointed with me, they might tell me again afterwards. Okay, I have two talks actually this time. One is on variadic templates and the other one on variable templates. I used to give these topics together, but for an hour slot, it's just a little bit too much. And I promised compile time computation, and I will not show you much of that today. That's more the topic of Wednesday. But nevertheless, just let's start. And I would like to thank Herb again for the nice musical intro, but I'm not sure if he's still in here. So what are we talking about? And anybody here has written a function taking C-style var args yet in his life? Wow. Who found it nice and convenient to implement it? Okay. I claim var args suck. And we all learned this morning from Bjarne that he wants to C++ be a type-safe language, and var args are inherently type-unsafe. It's very hard to implement correctly, and on the other hand, it's completely unsafe because you have to specify the type and number of actual arguments in some means that where the compiler has no control on it. Who has ever called printf wrong? You see, that's a problem. And this is a brain dead simple example of printing numbers, but you have to either make sure that all your numbers have the same type, down here, int, or do it in the printf way where you implicitly specify the type and the number of arguments through another argument, the format string, which is very error prone and hard to do right. Now let's see, var args sucks, and at least some of you can confirm that, and it's in the language because we still have the C legacy of printf and scanf. It's very error prone, just consider things outputting an int, giving it a double. It's unchecked by compilers. Well, there are tools who check the format strings of printf and scanf, but they're not commonly used, and some compilers will complain, others not. It's very difficult to implement it yourself correctly, and we only get passed by value. When we want to do something by, like scanf, or we want to have a side effect, we have to use pointers. And even Bjarne still loves pointers, plain pointers, to mean something. I hate pointers, because they still mean the old way of doing things in C, and that's not very C++-ish for me. And we even have a plugin for our IDE that is called Point Terminator. But only internally. We couldn't use that name officially, otherwise we get sued by Hollywood. So we learned that already, number and types of arguments. So, come on. Shit, that's when you do too many animations.
You can type the line number.
Let's see if that works. I want this slide. Thank you, learn something. Okay, what we actually want to use functions, maybe println is not a very good example, it's so Pascal-ish, but nevertheless, it's something we want to call a function where you just pass about anything, and if it works, it works, and if it doesn't work, we get a compile error. In Java,
You get similar things, but even there, it's not really type safe because everything is passed as an object. And in C++, since C++11, we have a nice feature called variadic template. And that's actually what we want to do. Actually, even before C++11, people were struggling with providing functions with multiple overloads to simulate what variadic templates actually are about. So we have, for example, boost bind that's in there since 2000 something, early 2000s, where we have a function binder where we can call a function or a functor with any number of arguments that actually that function takes, and that's fine and it works. We have even boost tuple where we can have arbitrary values of arbitrary types combined together in a single value. But to actually get that done requires a lot of repetitive code or using interesting macro features like the Boost preprocessor library provides to actually get that. And you always have a built-in maximum. You always have to specify, okay, I want bind with up to 10 arguments. That might be sufficient for almost all imaginable use cases, but somehow you might get a Windows API function with just 11 arguments. And we can argue a lot about the usefulness of such APIs, but it's still there. So what we would have done is actually provide print line overloads with any number and so on, so for without any additional argument in addition to the stream, with a single one, two, three, and so on, to be able to call print line with any number of arguments. That's not very convenient, a lot of repetitive code, and easy to make copy-paste mistakes. So who of you actually successfully wrote a template function in his or her life? Okay. Who never has written a template function? Very, very, very few. So the key about templates and function templates is we have functions in C++, we have overload resolution, which is a very tricky part. And if you want to see how what we do about get better overload resolution visualization, come tomorrow morning to my demo. And the key is we have pattern matching. So whenever you call a function, based on the type of the arguments and the number of the arguments, the corresponding function will be selected by the compiler by magic. And if there are template functions in the game, even their selection and instantiation happens more or less by magic. I don't want to go into the details, but there is kind of a best match situation that actually happens. And with class templates, we don't have overloads, we have specializations. So not only having a basic template for a class, we can have specializations either partially, like for pointers, pointer types, or complete specializations for specific combination of template arguments, and provide specific versions of an implementation for that specific case, or these cases. The classical example is vector bool. Who has ever used vector bool successfully? Without surprises. Okay, come to my demo tomorrow and see what happens with vector bool. So actually defining a variadic template function reuses a little bit of syntax, the ellipsis we already know from C, but in a more structured way. We have type name or other template arguments with a variable number of those, which can be zero or more. We usually use, if you define a function, a variadic template function, these type name arguments to specify our function arguments. And then we can use these function arguments by expanding them within another expression or call where it just replaces all of the arguments. That gives us the syntax. So we have ellipses in front of a name defining, okay, this is a so-called parameter pack. We have any number of these things. And if we use it after a name, it expands to how many actually were are there when the function is called or the template is instantiated and it's replaced by a list of these things. Now, this is not very useful yet, because how do we implement that? If we call the example variadic with any number of arguments and then call out println in there, how do we implement println? And okay, I already told you the terminology. We have the parameter packs and the pack expansion. So how do we implement it? And the key to that is actually recursion. So who has written successfully any kind of recursive function in his life or her life? Okay, you're all experts now. The key to recursion is actually you have a base case, typically with a parameter pack size of 0. And you have the regular case where you just take one away and do something with that one and then call the function itself with the rest. And it should somehow, so we provide a base case for our print line without any arguments, and this doesn't even have to need to be a template function, it's just a plain overload. And then we have an implementation where we actually spell out, okay, we have our stream to pass and we have the head, the tail, and now we do something with the head, outputting it on the stream. If there is still something in the tail, we just arbitrarily place a comma there and then call out for the rest of the elements into our println function. Whenever the last thing happens that the tail is actually empty, it's println with just out, and that we provide an overload for upfront without any arguments, and then the other print line actually gets called. You could do that. It's not that hard. So, I'm done. Well, there are some interesting aspects about templates, variadic templates and recursion. One of them is, okay, because it's a template, we always have to provide the whole source code. So we place the complete implementation in the header file. Not a big deal. But also, even if we never call the version of println where we actually have an empty tail, we must provide an overload for that situation. Why is that the case? You never call something, nevertheless, the compiler complains about that. And the situation is because the compiler sees the source code, instantiates print line up until the tail gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and if we got just one element left, the tail is empty. So we call print line with one argument, matches into the head, the tail is empty, size of tail is 0, but it still has to compile this little piece of code, even though it's not called when size of tail is 0. So we have to provide the overload with print line and the 0 size parameter pack, so the print line without anything, even though it's not never called. So we have to provide this overload, and we get compile errors if we forget that. A second thing, that's actually a piece of code I stole from Oliver Modals, or borrowed it. And who can guess the output? Or who has seen this piece of code yet? Oh, all pub quiz virgins. Then let's see. What would you expect from what's happening here? Foo is called with 1, 2, 48, 4, and 5. Any guesses? So which so what type is that? A char. So which foo overload matches best? John. So you think this one. So we call P and P prints out something. And because A is a char, P prints out the character, so it should print out 1. Now, we call foo args again with the rest. So this one is done. Now we call foo with 2, 48, and so on. 2? The same. OK. Now we get 48 as the rest. So here we call foo with what type? First argument? Int, which is the best match. The second foo, isn't it? OK. And that calls recursively foo again before doing anything else. So it calls foo with the character and another character. Which foo is called? You expect this one matching the character. Who is expecting the call with the character? Who is not expecting that, because I'm asking that way? OK, let's see what our compiler does, or our program does, with that. Where is my pub quiz? So this is the code we are having here. Let's try to compile it. And now run it. And we see something interesting. We see 1, 2. That was what we expected. 1, 2, recursion goes in here. And now we call foo with 48. We call this foo. And now we first recurse and then output something. And the point is here, when we call this foo, the compiler does overload resolution in the context of that template instantiation. And the lookup rules are the way that this foo actually match can only be any foo that was defined or declared before. So the compiler will never see that there's a foo where the first argument is a char and other arguments are allowed. So it calls foo int with the 4. 5, sorry, in this way, so it calls foo int again. And now we are left with the 5, character 5 in the foo args, and that actually matches this foo again. And this gives us the 3, which you printed here, and the character, which is a 5 here. And now we output, unwinding the stack from the call, PA with the ASCII code of 4, and now in the final thing, the 48. And the reason is, when we call functions within a template, depending on the position where the template is defined, the overload gets selected from where the function call actually is done, not overall of the program. And that's a gotcha, especially with variadic templates, because there you have to recurse, and you have to provide special cases, and then you better see all overloads when you actually call them. So you really have to declare template functions, because you always define them in header files. But here it can be a case where you actually have to declare template functions before you actually call them. So we learned something. I explained that already. So remember, when you implement Veridic templates where you have to recurse to get your tail right, you have to provide all overloads that might be appropriate for that situation where you recurse upfront. You have to declare them upfront, otherwise the compiler will not see them. And if you, for example, in our print line example, if you place print line below the template function, you will get a compile error because the compiler will not find a print line that matches here when it instantiates this recursively. So one thing to remember. Class templates. You can have variadic class templates. So the template type name dot 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 args is something you can write in front of a class as well. There are not as many useful cases for variadic class templates as there are for variadic function templates. The main reason it's in the language, it's because it's required for tuple and its corresponding infrastructure surrounding tuple, more or less. And for me, it was very hard to figure out, to find good examples where I want to have class templates with type name parameter packs that are not tuple-like. I might learn more. Maybe next year I give a talk on variadic class templates reloaded or something like that when I learn more about that. So what is a tuple? A tuple is actually a means to pass parameter packs around as a single argument to other functions. And its main use is in generic code. You wouldn't use it in plain code. At least, well, a simple example is, okay, you use make tuple. Actually, that's cheating. It's std make tuple. And provide just a list of values, and it will generate a type on the fly for you, or the compiler will generate the corresponding type with now a three tuple stored in a tuple. And there's another standard function called tie. It's not something you wear on your around your shirt. It's binding references into a tuple, so you can actually have multi-assignments in C++, where you can assign multiple values to multiple variables in one statement. Again, it's not that useful, but it can become handy. But there are a lot of misuses of tuple and make tuple and tie, and I'll just show you a single one I encountered recently in code in one of our project collaborators. They're using a tuple of bool, bool, bool. And that's a very, very bad idea. Because they create an abstraction of three flags. They don't name them. They're implicitly defined by the position. And then they use them with a very ugly syntax to get out the three individual flags. Never, ever try something like that at home. If you create an abstraction denoting flags or denoting a combination of values, create a type for that and give it a name and give the individual elements individual names, unless they're homogeneous and you have a kind of vector. But that's a different story. Even then, you might consider not using vector if they have different meanings, the elements. We are not back into Fortran where everything is an array. And now we can do everything as a tuple, but that's not a good idea. So, real-world examples of bad code. So we are back into the don't do this rules. There are other variadic class templates. I was too quick with my clicker. We can actually benefit from using dot, dot, dot when we provide template, template parameters. Who has written a template with a template, template parameter yet? Who never? Who doesn't even know what a template, template parameter is? Okay. So you have to come to my C++ lecture. One reason where you would use template-template parameters is, for example, if you write wrappers for standard containers, or you want to be able to select which kind of container type you use, either a list, a vector, or a deck, in another context, and then you don't want to specify it with a, let's say, a macro or so, you can pass it in as a template-template parameter. And there are some issues, especially who knows how many template parameters a vector has. Yeah, you better know, Stefan. say the others.
Two.
Great. And nobody except Stefan will actually use the second one. So we always see vector t, but actually it's vector t and some nasty thing called an allocator. And if you want to know how nasty it is, go to Stefan and ask him. He will be able to explain lengthiness on what hard things are there. But there are other things like set. If you write set t, you even might specify something as a second template argument without not always needing to do that. Because you can order the set in a different means, but you still can use it with just one template argument. And that's where a Viridic template parameter is actually helpful, where you can actually pass in vector or set, and I'll give you a code example soon. Another thing is non-type template parameter packs. For, let's say, the non-language standard speaking people, it's ints. You have parameter packs of ints and provide many of them and combine them, and actually these parameter packs in a class template make a type for each individual number and values of ints. And there's even a standard type around that called integer sequence. So you can have any number of types you can imagine by combining integers into an integer sequence. And if you're doing it really bad, like the tuple of bools, you can even codify all abstractions you have into these kinds of types. Don't do that. But they are useful, especially in combination with tuples. And I show you one example from my lecture. It's okay, we have a template class like SAC, or SEC, I think, in English. And we want to vary it on the underlying container that we're using. A vector might be the most efficient one, but I want to show my students how to make it inefficient by using std::list, for example. Or even very surprising by using a std::set. And to actually do that, we have that problem with the more than one template parameter and also different number of template parameters of vector and set. The implementation needs to a little bit adjusted, but it's perfectly performant. You just have to use a different syntax to get the same semantics. And if you do it like that, what you would be doing as a naive C++ user, you say, okay, I have my SAC with the value type I can put in, and I have a template parameter that takes this value type in the end. And that just doesn't compile. Because, as we learned from Stefan, vector has two template parameters. So the more convenient way to do that, I couldn't show that before C++11. Now it's much more convenient. I just write template type name dot, 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 class container to provide my template parameter, and I can call it with any number of arguments. Actually, I can call it or instantiate it with a container template that takes any number of arguments. It could be even zero if it makes sense, but it will not be called with zero, it will be called with t. But if it takes more and these are defaulted, it just works. So we can have a sec int with standard list and still have everything working. So that is one thing where the veridic templates actually are useful in the class context. Template parameters. Something to take home. If we want to deduce our t from our for our sac with the factory function, we actually have to specify somehow the container explicitly, because that cannot be deduced from the arguments of the factory function. And if we use a set, and it will become a set of characters, we just place in. We only get a 1C inside a set because it's unique. And so we need to flip the arguments from our sac specification and provide the container first, because defaulting and type deduction or argument deduction only works from the right. So from the initializer list that we pass in here, we can deduce T, and this one has to be the rightmost template parameter, and the container becomes the first one, so we have to specify it up here explicitly. So now you can all write perfect standard container wrapper classes. Who knows the game FizzBuzz? Okay. Can we play it? One? Huh? Two. One, two. Next one.
Are you pointing at
us? Yeah. Just go ahead. One, two. Fizz. Four. Buzz.
Fizz.
Seven. Eight. Fizz. Buzz. And so on. So it's a children's game on multiplication of 3 and 5. And Kevin Henney uses that as a programming exercise, and I stole that example from that. So now let's try to create Fizz Buzz at compile time using veridic templates. And here we make use of that clever integer sequence in its variant of index sequence, which just gives unsigned integers with values. And now we see something very clever. This API is a constexpr_auto function, so whatever it returns, it will be deduced. And we call it with an index sequence, and the type of that actually is passed in helps to deduce the template argument, which is a parameter pack of just values. So we get a list of values in there, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on. And we want to get out something that is the solution to FizzBuzz game. So we use index sequence to be able to deduce at compile time a list of values, to have individual values within the template. Within then the implementation of such a function template, we can make use of the values, for example, to initialize an array at compile time, which can be very useful, and you will see that on Wednesday. And for the first pass with the empty sequence, just to show off that we can use such tuple, we return an empty tuple. Or do we say that in English, tuple? Tuple?
Tuple.
And for if we have an index sequence with a value and many other values, we just take two tuples, combine them. First, we create a tuple for a single value. And then we take the tuple we create from the rest of the values, and tuplecat is a standard function that actually combines two tuples and returns another tuple of all of the values that are in both tuples together, concatenated. Easy. Recursion, remember? combining lists. In Lisp, it's just maybe a handful of characters to implement that like that. In C++, we still have a little bit of more syntactical overhead. Now, what is integer sequence? Integer sequence, thanks to Jonathan Bakley, I'm not sure if he's here or not, we get in this standard C++ 14, and it's actually was in, I believe it was invented to actually have a handy tool for working with tuples. And the thing that it provides, we have a thing called make index sequence that will generate us a sequence of numbers from 0 up to n minus 1 as the actual template arguments of index sequence. So we create a type from make index sequence. And that's why we have curly braces here. We actually instantiate an index sequence, which is an empty object. It doesn't occupy any storage, maybe except for your compiler enforcing that. I think Microsoft is guilty of that. But it doesn't have to need any, it doesn't have any member variables, so no space. And it has a type that has its index sequence with these numbers. What can we make use of that? Well, let's first look back for our FISBUS number. Okay. Stay tuned. One approach is, okay, we provide overloads with these specific index sequence types for 3, 5, and 15, and create tuples where we have FISBUS and FISBUS. And for, let's say, regular numbers that don't match any of these values, we just return the value. The problem is, it just doesn't scale. Because we not only have to provide overloads for 3 and 5, we have to provide overloads for all of these multiples. So the list is not ready. We have to provide overloads for 6, 9, 10, 12, and so on to get all FISBUS values right. But we see why we used tuples, because we can return numbers, nothing, or the character array, even of different lengths, and combine all of them in a single data structure without too much fuzzing of FISBUSing. So let's test it. We can write tests for that. So we make tuples by hand and then see if they match, and all these tests run. But it just doesn't scale. We can get it easily. So the solution actually is we provide overloads. We use SFINAE. Substitution failure is not an error. And I just Stack Overflow searched enable if to get it right. One means to use enable if to actually make things selection at compile time is to provide it as a defaulted additional function parameter. And you better provide then a void pointer, because then you can actually default this. The default of enable if is here just void, and you cannot use that version as a function parameter type to make this selection. So we now have a very convoluted switch statement on functions neither dividable by 3 or 5, on functions just dividable by 3 but not on 5, on values just dividable by 5 and not by 3, and those values who are dividable by 15. So we have four cases, and now we are done with FISBUS. And putting it together, we can actually write code where we make a tuple with this FISBUS up to 16, created by calling make index sequence and FISBUS, and then compare them. And here we see the use of a macro and conditional compilation. Why is that? Actually, if we do it wrong, it will fail to compile. And I usually like my test cases not fail to compile. So if the tuples are not exactly the same type, the equality cannot be checked. It will compile, be a compile error. And let's see if I'm promising something wrong. So this is the wrong code. Let's first see what I've done here. So we have a forward declaration of our FIS bus to be able to call it here correctly, not necessarily there. And we have something, is that what I wanted to show? Yeah. So we have all these test cases, including this one that I just showed. And to show you actually that our FIS bus is computed at compile time, I provided the same test case at compile time. So this thing will fail to compile if we change something. So one thing we can change is actually change the implementation to make it fail to compile. So let's compile that. And my claim is it should fail to compile. And actually our static assertion fails to compare the two tuples at compile time because we just changed the implementation. That's a good test case. Now if we get it working again, change it back again. It compiles. And if we run it, the non-compile time test cases, everything is green. Now let's try again the first attempt with the wrong implementation, just selecting the overloads by providing the special cases for the 3, 5, and 15. We get another compile error. Okay. So better our static assert is also not in here. Cheating. Never do that at home. Commenting out test cases. And let's run the test case again. And we see, oh, come on. Here. We see that there are some differences marked here where we get expect fizz bus and we get 6, 9, and 10, for example. Now, actually, how do we get that string output to be able to compare the results? And that's another thing I wanted to show you, and maybe I just switch back to my slides to go there. So that's what we've seen. Outputting our tuples. Why not just overload a shift operator for tuples? I'm not sure if that was proposed for the standard library already. Stefan, do you know about that?
No proposals
yet. Okay, maybe we should make that one. So we pass in a tuple, and just to show you another thing where you can provide variadic things is a variadic lambda. And I'm not sure if my forwarding reference is actually the right thing to do. And maybe auto it's by itself would be sufficient, dot, 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 t. So we can have lambdas now taking here our stream object by reference and providing a variable or a variadic number of arguments of any kind of types and just forward them. Oops, sorry. I shouldn't be too nervous with my finger when I'm using the mouse pointer. And forwarding it to our print line function that we just implemented at the beginning of the lecture. The thing is, variadic lambdas, you cannot implement on their own because you cannot recurse on lambdas. At least not in a way that it works with variadic lambda. So you cannot actually implement a variadic lambda within itself by recursion because it doesn't have a name, so you cannot call itself. I tried some tricks, but I failed to make anything work with that actually compiles, and I believe now, at least for my abilities, it's impossible. You can do things like passing the lambda into the itself, but that doesn't work for variadic lambdas because the values of the different instantiations of the different numbers of arguments are different values and not the same lambda. So, okay, forget it. Veridic lambdas, you can only delegate, but we have a print line function that actually takes any kind of t's and prints them out nicely. And what we actually need to do now is take our tuple and apply every element or every, how do you say, tuple element? Yes. Every element of the tuple as an argument to our printer lambda. And if you read the standard carefully, actually that apply function is implemented in the current standard, but not provided as a standard library function. I tried to fix that, but today we only have apply in the standard library. What's it called? Stefan, help me. The technical specification of the standard library extensions, so it's available in a namespace separate from the standard namespace, but it's not that complicated to implement because it's used as an example actually for index sequence. So how should it look like? That's it. So the simple thing is apply, that's what we actually called, and we call it with a tuple, and we know that tuple, even though it's just a name, is a tuple, so we can actually use something to access the elements of a tuple. We have seen in my brain dead bad bool, tuple of bool example, get angle brackets 0, get angle brackets 1, to actually obtain the values, the elements of the tuple. And we have to create that for any number of elements that are actually in the tuple. And to do that, we use an index sequence that is based on the size of the tuple, and to not care about any kind of const, volatile, or whatever thing, how the tuple might be passed in, we use the decay t, and then tuple size provides us with the value, the number of elements that are actually in the tuple. And with the index sequence, we have now the indices 0, 1, up to n minus 1 to get all the get arguments to obtain the values from the tuple. And we pass that indices value to our apply impl function. Indices, remember, except for a few compilers, it's empty. We just provide the type of it. And now apply impl, we get here an index sequence of i's. I's are the integers, 0, 1, up to n minus 1. And it gets deduced what these i's, the values are. And now we use get, providing the parameter pack as an index, giving it the tuple that we actually obtained from the outer call, and expand that with dot, dot, dot. So the dot, dot, dot actually is able not only to be applied directly after a parameter pack, but also after the expression, and the expression is repeated for each element in the parameter pack. So actually we are calling f, whatever f is, it's print line in our example, with the values that are actually stored in the original tuple in the sequence, how many there are. So the pack expansion works on all that code that is written there. And I don't want to go into details of forwarding. I'm not sure if I got it right anyway. So the point is, yeah, we still have 10 minutes. So we can do that with class templates as well. And just for the sake of the example, I'm not using compile time evaluation, because that looks even more ugly with class templates. I just do some runtime side effects. And what is better as for a runtime side effect as a destructor? So let's see. Come on. So first attempt, not perfect yet. We provide a class template forward declaration, taking a variable number of numbers. We provide a base case specialization without any numbers. And I just hide what we are doing there. And now we can actually provide recursion. We can do a case where we cut off the first number and do something with it and inherit from our own template with just the rest of the numbers. And this inheritance chain will actually end because we have this special case for the empty list, where we, which is our underlying base class. We could do special cases for 3, 5, and so on, 6, 9, 10, 12, 15. But again, that doesn't scale well. So we cannot provide all specialization for these specific numbers that don't, where we have to output FIS or BUS or FISBUS. So we need to actually do something about that. We apply the same trick as before. We provide a level of indirection. We solve the problem for individual digits or individual numbers, and then for the rest. And again, we need sphenae. And just to make it nice, we have the base case where we use the O stream, remember that, and in the destructor, in all the other destructors, we actually output the number we are caring about, or the FIS or the BUS or the FISBUS. So we again use sphenae. And to provide a good, easier framework for that, we now have again our forward declaration. We provide FISBUS for n and the rest by inheriting from the rest and from the single number, n. We remember our O stream, pass it on to our base classes, and we are done. Also, for the zero case, we just inherit from the rest, so we cut off zero because zero is nothing for small children. They just start counting by one. So we have a partial specialization for sequences starting with zero that just inherits from the rest of the sequence and nothing else. And we also have our special case with the empty sequence. Now, the FISBUS single number solution uses sphenae again. To enable that on a class template basis, we cannot use a function parameter that we default, but we can provide a class template parameter, a type name template parameter that we default. And again, the magic matching mechanism of C++ comes into place, where we actually have a base case where we say, okay, for every number, we just output the number and a new line in our destructor, which is not something you should do at home. And who can tell me why I wrote this there? I'm not sure if I need it there, but it's a very good advice to use this in this case. Any idea? Why should you use this in templates? Stefan will know, and he will tell me I'm wrong.
It looks like you're trying to reach into a dependent base class. This one doesn't happen to have any, but in general, you
yeah. Know. That's because I refactored the code. So the reason is, whenever you are referring to members, especially function members, in a class template, you always have the danger that the lookup goes wrong. If you're referring to an inherited member, then you have to provide this, otherwise the name lookup might just get you something else or not at all what you want to get. So, a good advice, use this whenever you define class templates and you're on the safe side. It's like not using pointers, maybe. But here it's not necessary that I recognize, that's why I was telling that. So what we do, we use the second template argument in a specialization, partial specialization, and check if a number is divisible by 3 and not by 5, and so on, as we've seen before, and output in the destructor FIS, BUS, or FISBUS. And to see the slight difference, in C++ 14 we have all the type trait classes like enableIf with a special version of underscore T. These are actually template aliases, and they provide us with the shorthand notation what you would have to write like this in C++ 11. So you have to specify type name, std, enable if, whatever you pass in there, colon, colon, type. And C++ 14, just less code. You learned this morning, less code is better software by Bjarne. So express the same in less code, and that's a tiny saving of about 10 characters. But even a single one makes sense. So we can test that. And just to show you another C++ 11-ish thing is a raw string with the new lines embedded to actually test that our output is done on the destruction of our FISBUS. And we can even test the whole sequence, excuse the two-column layout, but I couldn't rotate the projector to show you the test case. And we, again, can use make index sequence to get 1, 2, FIS, 4, bus, FIS, 7, 8, FIS, bus, 11, FIS, 13, 14, FIS, bus, 16, 17, FIS, 19, bus. And I have to show you the code for that, otherwise you wouldn't believe it. So here's the implementation. You've seen that already. And here are my test cases for the empty sequence, for a single digit, for FIS, for bus, and for a simple FIS bus. And I already also provide a factory function to just make it interesting, and using make index sequence to get my 20 numbers of FISBUS. And if we compile that, it seems to compile, and we can run it as a test case, and we get a green bar with that. And if you don't believe that the test case works, just change something, run it again, and we get a nice view where we actually failed by changing the test case. So, very templates are no magic. It requires recursion for the compiler, even when it's never called. That's something to remember. Class templates, I believe, are a little bit less useful than varietic functions or even varietic lambdas, unless you have template-template parameters, which are more or less parameters for class templates, where the varietic type name parameter can be very handy. Remember template argument deduction for function templates, a very powerful tool, very easy to get not what you want. Most of the time, compilers, which is on the good side, but sometimes interesting effects, especially with the overload resolution that goes in the way. And if you want to learn a little bit more, you can learn more from me tomorrow as in the demo and on Wednesday, if I survive. Questions? Oh, by the way, you've seen the great IDE that's free, Cvelop. Unfortunately, we are just about to release a new version. It's not ready yet because our underlying platform is not yet ready yet, and it still has some minor issues with the C++ 14 syntax that aren't solved yet, and I'm not sure we can solve that for the next release. But for most of the code, it's just working. It provides a lot of refactoring, good tools, and if you wait half a year or a little bit longer, two of the students here will actually provide you a const sanitizer for your code interactively that shows you where you should place const if they do it good, and motivate them that you want that. And a lot of code, let's say, A lot of things Bjarne asked for this morning, we actually do already with our IDE. Maybe not all what's in the great document, but a lot of things of modernizing code are supported there, either by marking it from static analysis or even providing fixes for that. So that's it. Now for questions. Someone with the mic, or well, I can try to repeat. They will be available online whenever I find time to upload them in the next couple of hours. Maybe tomorrow morning or so, because in the hotel I have a slightly better internet connection.
Are you able to get the URL when they'll be available?
Usually they are announced on CppCon, and I will tweet and G+ them. Is that okay? And you can also send me an email and ask nicely. More questions?
Is there a reverse apply, or do we have to reverse the tuple ourselves and then call apply?
I have to look interesting at Stefan. I'm not sure about all means. I believe that there is a reverse.
There are no utilities either in the standard or in the TS yet for reversing either a tuple or an integer sequence. You could write your one yourself. It's a good demo.
Yeah. I can show you some of that on Wednesday morning, where I do interesting things with integer sequences. And reverse is just, it might not be very efficient if you do it naively, but that's okay. So the question was, can we have a reverse apply where we just flip the tuple elements around in the opposite order, and that's not available in the standard library. But you're free to suppose that. And Stefan will be happy to comply to implement it for the Microsoft platform. More questions? Come on. So we are all perfect Veridic template programmers from now on. Show me your code. There's a question, yeah. I would say the print line example is one where the compactness outweighs the recursion thing, because to get something similar you have to write much more code, and it works even for 20 arguments.
Outside of the print line.
What's that?
Outside of the print line, it seems very narrow in scope.
Let's say when you write generic code, you will urge for having things like variable templates. If you just call simple functions with defined number of arguments, which are very few, then you don't need variadic templates.
Variadic templates are also very good at argument forwarding. You don't know which construct you want to call. Just give me a bunch of arguments, and then I'll go forward.
But that's generic code. So the argument is, okay, what usefulness is forwarding arguments for Veridic templates, but that's generic code again. So if you don't write generic code, you don't write template in your own code base, then you don't need Veridic templates. But Veridic lambdas can be very convenient, especially also for the forwarding thing, as you've seen in my example. Again, generic code. And if you want to learn more on how to use things like index sequence, come on Wednesday. More questions? I can't see hands.
We're checking your base case for zero remaining questions.
Okay. I hope I don't need to recurse on myself. That's not very nice. Okay, thank you very much again. See you through the week.